Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Vicicelli.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Vicicelli. And my guest today is no stranger to Catholic radio. He's been a regular guest on many of the national programs like the Sunrise Morning Show, Catholic Connection, and Catholic Answers Live. And we are so blessed to have him as one of our local hosts here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. He is Monsignor Eugene Morris. He's the Director of Sacred Liturgy and an Assistant Theology Professor at the Pontifical College Josephinum. He's here to share his story on Answering the Call on this program. And thanks for being with us, Monsignor Morris.
Elizabeth, thank you for the invitation. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here, and you're sitting in a different seat today. Usually you're in my seat.
I am. So it's kind of nice being on this side. I'm seeing things that I had not seen on the studio before, so it's nice.
Now, you have a very impressive resume of degrees and academic positions, but we'd have to make this an hour show if we were going to cover that all. But
thank you.
What I want to do is at least start with your beginnings. So we'll go back to St. Louis, because I know you were actually born in Cleveland, Ohio,
yes.
But your home is really St. Louis. That's where you grew up. Tell us a little bit about your family life and what they, if at all, contributed to your Catholicism.
I'm a child of converts. My mother was a Missouri Synod Lutheran. My father was a Southern Baptist, both of whom converted before my sister was born, believing that in order to send us to Catholic grade schools, they themselves had to be Catholic. As I look back on it now, of all the religions and all the ways they could have chosen this, to have a Southern Baptist and a Missouri Synod Lutheran choose Catholicism as kind of the middle ground is really the strangest kind of conflagration that ever could have happened. And I really, as I've thought and reflected on my vocation, it really was to begin that process of leading me to the priesthood. But my family was a Christian family, so well, certainly not a Catholic family. I didn't grow up in a Catholic household knowing kind of Catholic traditions, but certainly prayer. I have a crucifix that hangs on my wall that's been in my family for several generations, belonged to my great-great-aunt, herself a very devout Missouri Synod Lutheran. I had a very difficult time with her oldest nephew, or great-nephew, studying for the Catholic priesthood. We'll come to that eventually. But very much a part of, given the nature of kind of St. Louis at that time, so this would have been in the early 70s and through the early 80s, St. Louis then and now is a very Catholic place. And so the priests in my life and priests in my parish were very much a part of my growing up, serving especially. I started serving when I was in fourth grade and really fell in love with being at Mass and being at church. And my family was supportive of that. I don't think they really understood and weren't always themselves faithful to going to Mass on Sunday. But when I was required to serve, or I also sang in the choir, and I started singing actually in the choir in second grade when I was at the cathedral grade school, they were always there to support, always there to make sure I was actually present. So I look back on kind of the discipline that I got from my family, and it was more when you have a job and you have a responsibility, you need to fulfill it. Mine were just particularly related to these religious things, which I don't think they really understood, but certainly never kind of stood in the way. I don't think, obviously, priesthood was on anybody's mind. I don't think my parents would have even conceived of that as a reality, and that doesn't come until much later. But my first inklings of a vocation were because I was a server, and then, you know, further on in grade school, especially in sixth grade, very much the idea of wanting to be a priest was very uppermost in my mind.
Yeah, tell us about that sixth grade, because you had sort of a turning point right there.
It was, and it's an interesting thing. When Sarah International, they're devoted to promoting and sustaining vocations in the priesthood particularly, but in general, for just a couple of years in St. Louis, put together what they called these vocation fests, mm-hmm. where they invited religious orders of both men and women and people from the vocation office for the diocese to come and gather at particular grade schools, and they brought the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders through to basically pick up brochures and to look around and see this. So they only did it a couple of years because I only found out after I was ordained that they didn't get that much of a turnout and a response. But I remember walking in as a 6th grader and seeing all of these orders of men and brothers actually as well, but just all these different orders, and I just remember being, I mean, just overwhelmingly excited about how cool this was. I had been thinking about priesthood, and of course, the priests in my parish, particularly my pastor, were wonderful models of priestly zeal, priestly dedication, priestly love. My pastor especially, and I'll talk about him in a minute, But then to kind of, you know, intensify that experience was to walk into this room and to see all of these different religious orders. And I remember taking home and just brochure. So, you know, I guess like kids when they go to a college fair, excited about all the different options, I was jazzed about this. And I remember thinking, I want to be a priest. This is what I'm called to do. I wasn't thinking in terms of being a religious or being a diocesan, just that it was neat to be able to do all these different things. And for me, it was always, and I realize that, especially now in hindsight, it always centered around the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. I loved and love being at Mass, whether I was a server or whether I was cantering or singing. And then obviously now as a priest, being able to celebrate Mass. And so that experience just kind of stayed with me. And I know it did. Again, this is more in hindsight now. I can speak more eloquently now about it as I've gotten older. As a kid, it was just simply really something in my heart. Coupled with my pastor, Monsignor James Finley, he has gone to the Lord, had very serious arthritis in both of his hips, walked with two canes, but was probably one of the most joyful people that I ever encountered in my life. And being able to serve with him at any given moment was always an opportunity for joy, but also kind of a little bit of trepidation. He was a serious man. He didn't brook any kind of, you know, silliness in the sanctuary. He always had the canes, and he wasn't afraid to use them if you were stepping out of line. But then to the reverence with which he celebrated Mass, and especially every Holy Thursday when I was growing up, he always washed the feet of 12 men in the parish. This was a man who couldn't tie shoes because he was, I mean, in that much pain constantly. But to see him get down on his knees and move from one foot to another of the 12 men who were chosen to have their feet washed was absolutely incredible. And I remember, especially after this experience of the Vocation Fest, thinking, I really want to be like Monsignor Finley.
It's wonderful to have such a great role model.
Oh, it was incredible. He and from that moment, you know, and we know this statistically now that, you know, every young man really begins thinking about priesthood when he's invited. With Monsignor Finley, it was always kind of the expectation that I would be a priest. I don't actually ever remember him saying, "Have you thought about it?" He would always talk about when you are ordained, you're going to be the priest. And of course, you know, my friends in grade school used to tease me. My friends in high school used to tease me about it as well. But for him, it was always a very serious reality and was always very supportive of my vocation, both in grade school. Then when I went to a Jesuit high school, much to his chagrin, he was afraid I would be lost to the Jesuits, which for a while I was. He was not pleased about my time in religious life, but even then was supportive. And then when I left religious life and came to the Archdiocese and studied for the Archdiocese, it was always very supportive.
Well, let's talk about that. You did initially, as you say, pursue the Society of Jesus. Was that because of your Jesuit high school, or what was it, the draw there?
It was very much a part of my Jesuit high school. I had no experience, unlike other men who may have grown up in parishes with religious, no experience with religious at all. And again, even after having that experience in grade school where I saw all of these different religious orders, as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old, you really don't understand those type of distinctions. So I didn't know, you know, vows versus not and promises and things of that nature. Just excited by the whole reality. Exposed to the Society of Jesus as a young man, and I loved my high school. I still do. It's very much a part of my life. I went there. I eventually taught there. My nephew was graduated from there as well. So it's if you meet guys who graduated from St. Lucia High, we're very loyal. Despite all of our different experiences, you can go really anywhere in the world and meet a St. Lucia High grad, and there automatically is a real connection there. So my experience with them was, especially my junior and senior year, very much wanting to teach in addition to wanting to be a priest. And so I thought, what better way to do that than to become a Jesuit? I remember on a retreat that we made my junior year, we had this custom of writing a letter to ourselves at the end of our junior year that then would be mailed to us at the beginning of our senior year. And on that junior retreat, I wrote this letter to myself basically saying, remember, you had committed to the priesthood. This is what you were going to do with your life. And actually, I was in the process of applying to secular colleges when I got this letter. And it just kind of, you know, again, it had been in the back of my mind. But I think at that point, while I had thought about priesthood, I could hear my mother saying and other people, just go to college. And if it's still there, it will be there. But upon getting that letter and then talking with some of the Jesuits with whom I was very close, again, much like Monsignor Finley, they all said, well, this seems to make perfect sense for you. You should simply come and enter the Society of Jesus. So I applied in the early spring of 1983, was accepted in February. Actually, it was February the 14th that I was accepted, 1983. I can't believe it's 31 years ago almost now. And entered that August the 25th, 1983.
You know, I want to ask the question about your parents, because I'm thinking here they were, you know, they had converted to Catholicism. They were sending their three children to Catholic school for good education. they probably weren't bargaining and getting a priest out of the deal.
No, not at all.
So where were they emotionally at with that? Were they surprised by that? Were they reluctant?
Reluctant and a little angry, as a matter of fact. When I came home, and actually I kept secret that I was applying to the Society of Jesus. I didn't actually let anybody know I was applying until I actually had to tell my mother that I had to get her permission to go take a psychological test. Why are you taking a psychological? I mean, I know you're crazy, but why are you doing this as a, you know, 17-year-old on your own? Because I've been applying to the Society of Jesus. At that point, I had already gotten I had already filled out the application. I had sent it back. I had been going to kind of a vocation awareness group that the Society was running through St. Louis U High. But again, I think they knew, I mean, obviously at this point, they knew I was serious about priesthood, but I kept putting it off. My mother wouldn't let me go to the diocesan seminary high school. I think she kept thinking the older I get, the more this would kind of die away. Actually, it wasn't. So when I finally was accepted, there really was kind of a quiet and a pall in the house. There wasn't active anything against it. So they weren't kind of saying, you can't go, or we're going to, you know, chain me in your room like they did Aquinas and lock me in my room. But it wasn't very supportive. My oldest sister, who's one of my greatest friends now, I don't know if I should say this as a matter of public record, but wrote me a rather pointed letter about, you know, abandoning the family and mm-hmm. what are you doing with your life? You're yep. wasting your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, you know, I remember my younger brother just being upset because I wouldn't be here anymore. So it really wasn't. And I realized as I was getting these responses from my family that this really is a call because it wasn't deterring me. Mm-hmm. It was like, I'm going to have to do this. I would love for you all to be supportive, but I'm going to have to go and do this. So even when they brought me out, my mom, and at this point, my parents had divorced, my mother remarried, my stepfather was more supportive. My stepfather, my mother, and my brother drove me out to Denver where the novitiate was, and the rule at the time was they could drop us off that day. They had to leave that evening. So it wasn't a lot of, you know, staying around and get the room set up and put up posters and stuff. It was like, you drop you off and then you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my mother just being almost overwrought with emotion, and I was like, okay, let's go. I'm ready to go. And really, you know, even though eventually I left the society, certainly feeling very affirmed in my call to religious life, but then really my call to priesthood.
And what was it that after 8 years with the Jesuits, you discerned a different calling? What took place?
My experience of teaching high school, so after novitiate, after studies, I went back and taught at my alma mater, SLU High, for 2 years. And found that what I loved about being at SLU High was not only my work in the classroom, but my work outside of the classroom and getting to know the families, really being connected with guys as they were being graduated and would come back and just, you know, kind of being a touchstone. I'm a rare St. Louisan in that I like being away from St. Louis, but I also love being there. We don't leave home very often. And so the idea of having to travel around a lot didn't sit well with me. But it really was, I want to be with people kind of throughout all aspects of their life. And I found myself coming back to what were my original desire. And that was to celebrate Mass and hear confessions, you know, and like Monsignor Finley, to be at a place for 15 years, mm-hmm. you know, and know generations of people. It's interesting how my life has kind of played itself out because I actually haven't done any of that at all.
Yes.
As a diocesan priest, but that's what was actually going on there. So for some guys, you know, their leaving was a lot more tumultuous. It was a hard decision to make. And I left with, you know, no bitterness or rancor toward the society. I just knew that I was going to be able, the best priest that I could be and the best priest I could be of service to the church was going to be as a diocesan priest.
So you would enter the diocesan seminary for the Archdiocese of St. Louis in 1991 and you'd be ordained a priest in 1996. But as you say, the ironic thing is in your 18 years of priesthood, very few of those years has actually been in the typical parish setting. God was going to be calling you on a whole new vocational path of teaching and formation. We're going to talk all about that. But if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Monsignor Eugene Morris. He's the Director of Sacred Liturgy and an Assistant Professor of Theology at the Pontifical College Josephinum. And he's our guest today on Answering the Call. So, Monsignor Morris, like so many guests on this program, your path of additional studies would take you to Rome.
Yes.
The cradle of Catholicism.
Yes.
What was your biggest takeaway from studying in Rome?
First of all, I love Rome. Anyone who knows me knows that I love Rome. I love going back to Rome. If I had to pinpoint one thing, it would be the universality of the church. My first experience of Rome was in 1990 as a young scholastic leading a tour. And then I went back as a newly ordained priest. But then to live there for 2 years and to experience really just people from literally every corner of the globe who were Catholic and all of us united by our faith, most especially in those experiences, I was very privileged at the time to have several Masses with Blessed John Paul II, both in his private chapel, but then also just the Masses he would have in the square to help distribute Holy Communion. And to be present there and to be standing next to priests who were from every walk, every part of the world. And the language that we had in common, practically, was actually Latin. Spiritually, it was our common love of the Lord and our faith in the Eucharist. And it just really was an extremely, and remains an extremely encouraging experience. Because there's so many times you can become a little bit depressed by what you experience here in the United States in terms of how the faith is being paid out. And certainly in the last, 50 years, how things have kind of been experienced for us in terms of numbers decreasing, things of that nature. You get the impression that the church is dying. Mm-hmm. And then certainly the media at times foments and feeds that. Then you go to Rome, it's like, no, it's not.
Mm-mm.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, young vocations, young women, religious particularly, but in general, just everywhere you turn, we're almost like a dime a dozen there. You know, no one's turning their head anymore, because everywhere you look, there are young clergy everywhere. No one's excited by it. But so that experience has always kind of remained for me. And going back now, I'm not young clergy anymore, at least not as young as some. I'm still moved by the universality of the church and the experience of just all of these people who come together, especially centered around the Holy Father. So mm-hmm. Blessed John Paul II, Benedict XVI, now our Holy Father Francis, is a living kind of lightning rod for people to come together and express their faith. It really is a very visible, palpable manifestation of the power of Christ in Holy Mother Church.
When you came back to the States, then God was leading you to play a vital role in the formation of priests and deacons. You taught at Kenrick Glennon Seminary in St. Louis. After that, you were director of the Office of Permanent Diaconate and the Vicar for Deacons for the Archdiocese. And you also established the St. Maximilian Kolbe House of Discernment. And all the while, you were serving under the then Archbishop, Raymond Burke, who today, of course, is the Cardinal in Rome. What was the experience like to serve under him?
I always have summed that up by saying that he made me want to be a better priest. He is the beautiful embodiment of spiritual fatherhood, in that by how he comports and lives his priestly, episcopal, cardinalatial life now, personally a very holy man, extremely prayerful man, a very faithful man, and all of that done with the utmost charity and compassion for those who share his views and those who do not. You would very rarely hear an uncharitable word come from his mouth. And even then, it really wasn't an uncharitable word, more of an expression of kind of a consternation or a frustration in his interactions with others. And a number of us who were young and able to serve him in a variety of different ways said that we wanted to do well, not because we were currying favor, but because he was so holy, we wanted to be holy. And it always has kind of remained to me, in the positions of leadership that I've had, I want to make sure that people want to do things for me and work with me, not, again, to make me happy, but because hopefully by the manner in which I'm living my life, that becomes an inspiration for him. It remains just one of the kind of, it is the high watermark, one of the high watermarks of my life as a priest, to be able to have served him in the variety of ways that I did, and the confidence that he constantly placed in me. I always thanked him for that. It's not easy for an ordinary to come in and to know who he can trust and who he can ask for assistance. But he did, and he consistently did that. Even when there were times where I had missteps and made his life difficult, people complaining about me or writing letters about me, things of that nature, he would always be very supportive. He would tell me, get your act together, make it work. So he was very clear about that. But it wasn't, I'm firing you, I'm embarrassed or ashamed of you. I know who you are. I know what you're about. I know you're doing a good job. I know you can do a better job. I'm going to be here to support you in doing that. They really were beautiful years. The day he left remains one of the saddest days of my life. I remember actually getting up that morning and getting the phone call from a friend of mine that all of this was kind of transpiring, although I knew it was kind of happening. So I've been and remain very grateful for his leadership and his relationship in my life.
Do you have any contact with him now?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It's something that I would be remiss in giving up. He's obviously much busier now than he was even as the Archbishop of St. Louis, literally traveling all over the world. But I've had chances when I've been back to Rome to visit with him. And again, just, an email from him or a card from him at Christmas time is always a great blessing for me.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, tell us how the Diocese of Columbus was so fortunate to have attained you as the Director of Sacred Liturgy up at the Josephinum.
My then the rector at the Josephinum, Father Jim Wehner, who's now the rector of the seminary in New Orleans, he and I studied together in Rome. A mutual friend of ours at the rector's dinner one year, they were talking, and it came in conversation, they were looking for a director of sacred liturgy. This friend of mine, who's a graduate of the Josephinum and is a priest in the Diocese of Covington, said you should call Gene Morris. You know, he had been doing that at Kenrick, although I had just become pastor at this time. And Father Wehner said, oh, yeah, Gene sent me a note when I became rector. It'd be great. I'll call him up. My friend told me this, that he had they had made this kind of interchange. I really didn't think anything of it. I get a call from Father Wehner that he's made contact with Archbishop Carlson, who's given him permission to contact me, and he wants this actually to happen. This is in late April, early May of 2010. I'd been at my parish assignment as pastor just for 1 year at this point. I'm like, no, I can't. I don't want to do this. I can't do this. I've only been a pastor for a year. I just got here. I've been dying to be a pastor. I want to get out of this. I don't want to do this. He said, well, would you be willing to come in December? Would you be willing to wait a year? What are the options here? And I said, well, truth be told, if we're going to do this, I know that there are needs now. But I really didn't think actually that the Archbishop would be actually let me go. I think he was happy to let me have the conversation, but I'm thinking to myself, he's really not going to let me go. He said, well, I'll tell you what, if you're okay with it, I'm going to write the Archbishop and say we had the conversation and see what he actually says. Well, the Archbishop said, you can go. So I thought about it, and a very good friend of mine, the same preacher friend of mine, and he and I spoke about it, because I had a similar reaction from my family as I did when I went away to the society. They were not supportive at all. They wanted me to stay in St. Louis. All of my friends, at this point, no one was pleased that I would be leaving at all. But my friend said, you know, you have a particular skill set that makes you very valuable in the seminary, and you have to think about the universal church. And I said, well, when you put it that way, I can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do I say no? That's the same reason Cardinal Burke, you know, accepted the invitation from the Holy Father, Benedict XVI. That's, we do this for the church. And at that point, I went to Our Lady of Perpetual Help altar at my parish, and I was pastor of my home parish. So that altar has been a lot to me in making all of these grand decisions throughout my life. I went back there and I knelt in front of Our Lady. And I said, okay, here's what everyone is telling me. You got to give me some clue here. And the next morning, I felt at peace calling Archbishop Carlson, telling him I would accept the position, and here I am.
So you started working at the Josephinum in 2010?
Yes.
And tell us what the Director of Sacred Liturgy does up there.
Practically speaking, I am responsible for all of the liturgies that happen at the Josephinum. We have four chapels, the main chapel, St. Trebius, and then one for both the School of Theology and the college. And then we have a smaller chapel for daily prayer, St. Rose of Lima. We have, obviously, morning prayer, Mass, evening prayer, holy hour every day. So I'm responsible for organizing and overseeing all of that. I'm also in charge of liturgical formation for the men in the School of Theology, preparing guys for diaconate and for priestly ordination. And then I also teach sacramental theology and Mariology as well. Okay. My primary work outside of being the Director of Sacred Liturgy is primarily in the School of Theology itself with the older men.
Okay. So that's a lot of hats you're wearing, but I know that beyond that, you also speak not only locally at parish and events, but you've been speaking at events around the nation as well. You're a guest lecturer, a retreat leader, and then there's radio.
Yes.
So I want to talk a little bit about your radio background, because you didn't study broadcasting in school, but you're a natural.
Thank you. Okay?
And you really, one only has to tune in to the last 3 hours of our spirit drive to hear Monsignor Morris, because he is the highest energy of the whole team, and just awesome how you really rally everybody at the end. So how did you get involved in radio? How did that all come about?
Some very good friends of mine at home, Teresa and Tony Holman, who started Covenant Network in St. Louis, invited me to give a talk 1 year when I was a deacon, actually transitional deacon, on Lent on the radio. And I had a blast. And Tony and Teresa are very good friends of mine and really just invited me to really to do whatever it is that I could do. But I really credit Jerry Usher, who at that time was the host of Catholic Answers Live, who would go around the country doing pledge drives for Catholic radio. I sat with him a couple of times, just an hour, and that turned in over the course of years being with him several days. And just his encouragement and taking on more responsibility, Tony and Teresa encouraging me to do more. I really have loved Catholic radio and the power of Catholic radio. And I'm a convert in that regard, in that when Tony and Teresa asked me to do this, I really didn't believe it. I mean, who listens to radio anymore? I watch television. I go to the movies, you know, your DVDs. Nobody listens to radio, but everybody listens to radio.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, because people can't watch TV at work or in the car, despite what's going on now with cars and things of that nature. So to know the impact that it's actually had on people's lives, and I love talking about the faith. And I've always done that. So coming here as well, when I came to Columbus, very much invited to come and do this. And anytime, my rule is anytime anyone asks me to come and speak, I'm going to speak. They may not ask me back, but more often than not, unless I can't because I'm someplace else, I'm actually going to say yes. And so I've loved doing Catholic radio.
And you've hosted local programs for us as well.
I have. I started doing, my first show was on the sacrament, sacramentals, and the sacramental life of the church. What's the name of that show? Celebrating the Christian Mysteries. How can I not remember that? And then I was privileged to do a show with Father Blau, the Dominican, on during the Year of Faith, Zeal for the Kingdom. And then in the process now of hopefully coming up with new ideas for more programming.
Wonderful. Father, it's just been a wonderful and a fast half hour. I wish we could have more time to hear. Any unfinished goals or desires still out there in your priesthood?
I'm trying to finish my doctorate, practically speaking. But, you know, I always tell people, and I appreciate all the academic things that I've been able to achieve. But really, the thing that's most important to me is that I'm a priest.
Yes.
And even after getting the doctorate, I won't be doctor. I'm not. Those things don't. What matters to me is I'm a priest, and I'm grateful for my priestly life.
And we're grateful for your priestly life, too.
Thank you.
Monsignor Eugene Morris from the Pontifical College Josephinum, Director of Sacred Liturgy, would you end with a blessing?
Certainly. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
May Almighty God bless you all, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks again for sharing your journey, Monsignor. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. I'm also a Catholic speaker and the author of 15 books for adults and young people, including Where Do Priests Come From, Where Do Sisters Come From, and Where Do Deacons Come From. And I invite you to visit my website, Elizabeth Ficicelli, for more on my books and speaking. In the meantime, I hope you'll tune in next Tuesday and Sunday. The show is now on at 12:30 in the afternoon for another edition of Answering the Call. We'll meet more priests, more deacons, more religious sisters and brothers to hear about their spiritual journeys and how they are answering God's call and serving our church. In the meantime, have a great week and God bless.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com.